Welcome to A-State Connections. I'm your host, Jonathan Reeves. Over the next hour, you'll hear interviews and stories about the people of Arkansas State who are making an impact throughout the communities in the region. The show not only focuses on things that are going on at just the Jonesboro campus, but also on the other campuses across the ASU system. More information and today's features on A-State Connections can be found at kasu.org. Go to Shows and find the A-State Connections drop-down link. You can also find show segments on the new KASU app. Just use the search term KASU app in iTunes or Google Play and download for free. Up first, Second Saturday, Arkansas State University's Chancellor Dr. Kelly Damphus provides an update on how the university is getting ready to go back to having class sessions in the fall. Here's my interview with Dr. Kelly Damphus. Dr. Kelly Damphus joins us here at Arkansas State University. Dr. Damphus, good to have you here in the studio today. We are social distancing, or at least 6 feet apart here, but we're here in the studio, and it's really good to have you here.
Well, it's great to be back here in the studio. We've done so many things remotely. It's refreshing to get back on a campus. You and I both have been on campus a lot throughout this whole ordeal, but it's great to see other people starting to come back to campus, see the campus come back to life.
Right. With that, there's been some, I guess, some concern overall about how to be able to start returning people back to campus with COVID-19 going on. I know that this is something that you've not been taking, you've been taking very seriously. It's not something that you do lightly. So kind of tell us about how you've been making those decisions about slowly getting the campus back to where it needs to be.
Yeah. And so we have to get back at some point. And, you know, I think there is a sentiment out there that we should wait until there's a vaccine, but we may never get a vaccine for COVID-19. And so somehow, at some point, we have to come back. And what we're doing on our campus is to make sure that we are following our guidelines from the CDC and also from State Health Department, from the governor's office, about opening things back up again. And we're a state agency, and so we're under a mandate by the governor to bring our employees back to work. And in the summertime, that's primarily our staff members, not our faculty, because our faculty are able to continue working at home, and they're actually not on contract during the summer. So, but we also know that coming back to campus will be different for everybody. And, you know, you're wearing masks everywhere you go, and you're physically distancing from people, and it takes a while to get used to that. So that's why we're phasing people in to return back to campus. We're not bringing everybody back in one day. We're bringing in groups of people, about one-third of the campus employees back every Monday, so we can slowly get used to the new normal here. And we've created this return-to-learn plan, which I think is very comprehensive. It's also evolving. It will change whenever there's new guidelines. It'll change what our process is. But we have what we think is a pretty good plan to bring everybody back as safely as practical. I don't like to say as safely as possible, because the safest way, the way to keep everybody 100% safe, is just to keep everybody at home, just to lock everything down and not open the campus at all. But we can't continue our mission if we completely shut things down. You just think about how difficult your job would have been if you would have been required to stay at home the whole time.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Yeah. So with that, I know that you're thinking about the fall semester, the next academic year. It's going to be rapidly approaching. And that kind of tell us about that by way of maybe some changes that people might see, especially if, you know, the students go back to class.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things, I know a lot of your listeners are not just A-State employees, but also people who live here in the community. And so they also depend on our students coming back to campus. And so there's an economic impact, not just for the university, but for the community as well. And we're planning on bringing students back to campus, face-to-face instruction for the most part. We have several faculty members who qualify to continue working from home for health reasons. And so they're going to be teaching online classes. And we've always had online classes in the fall semesters before. And so we'll have a smattering of online classes that are available for students to take if they don't feel comfortable coming to class, and for instructors to continue work doing their teaching responsibilities from home as well. But my sense is about 90% of what we offered face-to-face last fall will be offered face-to-face again this fall. But we have to adjust everything. So one of the things we're doing is having our faculty think about, can we teach a class where only half our students are in the classroom at a time and the other half are watching online, and then the next day the other half come face to face and the other half watch online? Or can we move a classroom to a bigger room so they can be more physically distanced? And so my class has 88 students and 88 seats, and so that's a pretty cramped classroom. So we're looking at moving my class to the auditorium, which can spread everybody out. I can fit everyone in one room. But there's lots of ways of doing that, dealing with that. Some of our classes are very difficult, though. We have to try to answer every question in advance so we're ready for a semester unlike anything we faced in the past.
All right. And I know that you've probably heard from some parents and others who are, you know, concerned about that. And I know that you've been taking a lot of steps to make sure that students, as you said, are safe, is practical as this goes on. So will students be back in the dorms and all those things?
Yeah, we'll have students living in the dorms. We have actually, the good news is we have a lot of our upperclassmen dorms are already fully subscribed, and we're pretty much full in the upperclassmen dorms. The freshman dorms, we always have a little bit more flexibility in there because we have more capacity than our freshman class has been. So we're trying to spread everybody out in those dorm rooms so that we don't have necessarily everybody having a roommate and a suite mate. But there's a limit to how much you can do that because you'd have to cut the capacity way back. And there's another limit in that a lot of students already have their roommate picked out and they want to have a roommate. And if that's the case, we're honoring those requests as well. But we're trying to spread people out as much as possible in the residence halls. And then we'll also have to, you know, consider doing things differently as far as programming. So normally we would have a floor meeting and everybody come together in a room and the RAs would talk to them about what it's like to live in the dorm, or they'd have activities and events and so on. We'll have to curtail a lot of those things because of the need to physically distance and to keep it, you know, to limit the spread of the virus as much as possible.
What would areas, common areas, like the Ring Center where you have a lot of students there normally, yeah, you know, the CAF and other areas, how would those areas look under the fall semester?
Well, we're doing the same thing that a lot of restaurants are doing. So some restaurants are either cordoning off tables and chairs, or they're just removing tables and chairs so they can spread things out more. So we've done a lot of that. We've also taped off certain areas. So if there are three chairs side by side, I just walked by your hallway, for example, you have three chairs in the hallway that are side by side, and we've taped off the middle one so that you can't have three people sitting there. You only have two people sitting there, and they're separated by a chair. And so we're doing a lot more of that physical distancing in public spaces to remove the opportunity for people to hang around too close to each other. And requiring masks is going to be a big deal for us on our campus. I know that's a controversial issue across the country. It is in our community as well. But on our campus, we believe the science suggests that wearing masks has a big impact on limiting the spread. And so we're going to require people to wear masks in and out of buildings and also in congregate areas where they aren't able to physically distance very much. And yeah, so we'll have as much procedures in place that we can. We've got spacing dots like you see at stores where people stand in line. We've got these Red Wolf paw prints for people to stand on. We're encouraging people to walk down the right side of aisles and the right side of stairwells so that people can space each other out a little bit. Entering the right side, right door, and exiting on the right side of doors and so on, just to try to do everything we can to limit the amount of interaction people have.
Dr. Kelly Danfus joining us here on A-State Connections on KASU. You know, the fall, typically you've got flu outbreaks and those things. Doesn't look like coronavirus is going to go away anytime soon. If Arkansas State starts seeing like a massive flu outbreak along with a COVID-19 outbreak, what are some of the things what are those kinds of plans? Do you see maybe doing like how it was in the spring where, you know, it goes back to online learning, or how do you address some of those issues?
Well, there's the small outbreak and the large outbreak. And so if we have individuals, when we have students and faculty and staff test positive, and it's inevitable it'll happen. We have all the summer, we've had staff members test positive for COVID. When that happens, we've got policies in place for isolating those who test positive and quarantining those who have had close contact. So in an isolated setting, you can spread people out and do quarantining and isolating pretty easily. When you get to a situation where a large number of people are testing positive, then you have to consider a couple of things: shutting things down for a couple of weeks and make sure everybody quarantines for 2 weeks, or doing it for a whole semester if you have to. which was what we did in the spring semester. And so those are options that we have in front of us. The other option that's also already in the plans, in the books, is to look at where we are in October to decide what happens to us after Thanksgiving. And so if things are in really bad shape in October, and if we can just kind of get through October and get to Thanksgiving, we have the option of not coming back to classes after Thanksgiving, which is what we did for spring break. We basically didn't come back after spring break.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would have online classes after Thanksgiving and online final exams after Thanksgiving as well. And so those are all the options that are out there. We hope we don't have to do any of that, but we have to acknowledge that it could happen. I watched a video today by Cam Patterson, who's the chancellor at UAMS, and they have projected pretty dire statistics for what the state will look like in October and November. And I hope they're wrong, but I can't base my strategy on hope. Hope is not a strategy. You know, we have to be, we have to assume, you know, we can hope for the best, but assume the worst will happen. And that's what our planning is all based on. And the nice thing is about that kind of planning, sometimes you can feel like, oh, we wasted all that time planning things out and it never happened. But at least we know that if it did happen, we're ready to move. In the spring, we weren't ready to transition to all online instruction. We did it. It was inelegant. We did the best we could. Our faculty were impressive. Our students did the best they could in the environment. But we have to be prepared now in case that happens. It's much more likely to happen in the fall than last fall. We weren't even thinking about pandemics and quarantines and isolations, even with the impending flu season and so on. We didn't anticipate that happening. I think we'd be foolish to not anticipate that would happen in the fall.
So with that, there's been some reports out about colleges, universities, schools being pressured to open, and I know you've heard some of that from the administration and that. So address it. Have you all been hearing some of that by way of pressuring to open or those kinds of things?
No, we've not felt any external pressure. We've been entirely internally motivated here. We believe that face-to-face instruction is the best instruction that you can have. Online instruction is good in some settings, but not in all settings. And we think the best experience is in a face-to-face setting. And we believe that we can do that safely here. But we've had no pressure from anyone to do that. And I believe, and I have no problems with people who decide, universities who decide on their own, to go all online. These decisions have to be made at the campus level. They know the context of the spread of the virus in their community. They also know their community. They know their faculty. They know their students. They're making very difficult decisions as well, because they risk losing a lot if they're wrong. I have no problem with them doing that, because they have to make the decision that's best for them, just like we have for us. As far as them getting pressured by other people, it's unfortunate this has become kind of a political issue. I'd prefer it to become remain a scientific and a medical issue.
Mm-hmm.
But there is politics involved in this, and that's unfortunate.
Well, and another thing about that is that there's been concern about international students.
Sure.
And that they may lose their visas if they're not able to take at least one in-person class, but we have international students. Can you address that, if you don't mind, please?
Sure. And so, you know, my personal biography makes this a personal issue for me, because I was an international student. I came to America on a student visa. I met a girl and decided to stay, and I went through the process and did that all legally, of course. But I have great empathy for the students, international students, who are confused and concerned about the current situation. Now, I think it's important to understand that the rule that was clarified this week has been a rule that's always been in place. The United States has always required international students who come to America to take in-person classes, not to be taking a full online load. And they suspended that this spring because of the rapid transition to online instruction. My hope would be that if we had another outbreak and we had to transition to all online instruction, that we get that same kind of waiver here. It turns out that there are, while there are universities that have already announced that they're going all online, We're not in that category. All of our classes are going to be, most of our classes will be face-to-face. Mm-hmm. But we have to be careful to make sure that our students understand that their restriction is that they have to take all online classes except for one. They can take one online class and the rest can be face-to-face. We have to be careful that they don't sign up for two online classes because that would put them in violation of the procedure. Or we have to be careful that if they're in one online class and the professor decides in the middle of the semester to change to an online setting, that now they have two and that could put them in violation. Or what happens if after Thanksgiving we go to all online? Does that put them in a problem?
Yeah.
And I don't like that uncertainty for our students. If a transition to all online instruction happens sometime in the middle of the semester and we don't get a waiver, that puts our students in a tremendous disadvantage. First off, it's difficult for them to travel home when something like that happens. So they have to stay here on campus.
Right.
They lose their visa status. They're in a limbo situation. Now, there are people out there who say, well, international students who are taking all online classes can do that from home. But that's wishful thinking in a way because not all countries have the same access to the internet that we have. So if you're in China, for example, you can have restricted access to the internet. You're certainly in a different time zone. So if your professor decides to do synchronous learning, you have to take those classes at 3 a.m. in your home country. That's not ideal learning either.
Right.
And if your professor says, go to our library and download this article and read it, if you're in a country that restricts people's access to the internet, they can't do that. So it's a tremendous disadvantage. And also some places might not have very good Wi-Fi and technology and so on. It's a tremendous disadvantage for our students if they don't get this waiver in the end. Our current situation is we're fine, but if we have to transition, it will be tremendously difficult for our students.
Right. And so and none of these questions are all easy to answer.
Yeah, they're not.
Because you just don't know what the future is going to hold. In that.
I hardly know what tomorrow looks like, let alone what October will look like.
And that's one of the challenges that you have, though, is being able to do that. How do you manage, you know, that kind of thinking about, I don't even know what tomorrow's going to look like, let alone what's going to happen in August?
Well, the problem, and that's a great question, when we're making plans for the fall, we're basing it on what we know today. And but we also know that that in August 25th, when classes start, that's 6.5 weeks from now. That things could be tremendously different. They could be way worse or they could be way better. There could be a vaccine between now and then. If there's a vaccine, everything's out the door. If there's a huge surge in infections, our plans could all be for naught and we could be decided to go all online. So we have to plan for what we know now, but also have to be prepared to make a shift. And that's, we have to have flexible thinking. And for some people, that's very difficult. It's hard for me. I like to know what's going to happen.
Right.
I love being able to predict what tomorrow's going to look like. But I've learned, if I've learned nothing else during this crisis, is I've learned to be cautious about making declarative statements about what the future will look like. Because I did a presentation for the Rotary Club a couple of days ago, and I shared with them our communications that we did, because we stored all the emails that I sent out to the campus community on our website. And I shared with them 2 days of emails on March 19th and March 20th. And I remember sending the first one out on March 19th saying, okay, I'm done for the day. And like an hour later, something else popped up. And I sent six emails on March 19th. And then I sent another one out on March 20th. And I remember in the morning I said, this is a big email. I sent this all out. Everything's good. And by noon, everything had changed. And I sent another one out in the afternoon. So it actually says March 20th morning update, March 20th afternoon update. And I learned that I just couldn't say, I know this is going to happen. We have to be flexible. So it's been the challenge of this whole situation. But, you know, we live in a very complex world, and learning how to be flexible is actually a great skill.
Right. Let's talk about commencement.
Sure.
Because I know that's going to change as well. So can we talk about that, please?
Sure. So one of the things we know is that students, and not just students, but their family, find a great deal of satisfaction in actually performing the act of commencement, walking across the stage, hear your name called, getting a diploma cover, and going back. The whole ceremony, the pomp and circumstance is meaningful for students. And many universities, and again, no fault of their own, everyone's trying to figure out the best way to do this. Many universities and high schools just canceled their graduation ceremonies. And some of them did a virtual ceremony where they read people's names on, and people could watch it online. But we waited as long as possible to cancel, to postpone our May graduation. We finally did that very late. We were one of the last ones to postpone it. But instead of canceling it, we moved it to August 8th, which is the Saturday after our summer graduation ceremonies, which is on the evening, always on the evening of that first Friday in August. And so we pushed it off till then, and then we started planning, like, what would graduation look like? And it became clear to us that graduation in the arena would be very difficult. We could get all the students in there, but we couldn't have any family members in there. And then we started thinking about what that would look like, and it was just very complex. And so we decided to move graduation ceremonies back to the football stadium. We used to have graduation in the football stadium back in 30 years ago, before we had a convocation center. And so we moved it back there. We actually have an evening service on August 7th for the summer graduates, and then a morning service, 9 o'clock in the morning on Saturday for the spring graduates. We're trying to avoid the heat of the day because it can be hot in August, as you know. So later in the evening and then early in the morning for the two ceremonies, very abbreviated ceremony itself. There'll be a student speaker. I'll make some welcoming remarks, but I won't be giving my normal, you know, speech. And then we're going to have the students on the field, spaced out at least 6 feet apart from each other on the field. And then we'll have family and guests, or guests of the students, in the stands, and they'll all be separated by 6 feet. They'll be able to sit together in groups of four, when we're eliminating to number four, four graduates or four guests of the graduates. But they'll be spread out through the whole stadium. We'll use the whole stadium up. The problem is, even the stadium that we have is still too small to allow unlimited number of guests, and so we've had a limit to four guests per student. Now, if all the students that we think will graduate come to walk, then we'll be pretty tight quarters. But if only half of them come, we'll have a little bit more room, and I don't know if we'll be able to get more guests in there. But that's our plan right now. The nice thing is that as we're currently doing it, we'll have students come in, and we won't have a processional. People will just come, and they'll be sent to their assigned seats. Same thing with faculty who want to come, and their guests will be assigned to seating as well, and they'll all kind of come in when they get there. When they arrive, there won't be a processional all in one place. And when the students get their diploma cover, they'll actually leave the stadium, and their families will, or their guests will leave as well. That way, we don't have everyone leaving all at one time. And so again, we're trying to think of every way we can to have as personal of an experience as possible. They'll still walk across stage. I'll still give them the diploma cover. My wife will still give them the graduation coin and so on. But it'll be different. Yeah. And hopefully it'll be short.
Do you know about when it will be safe to be able to hold events back at the First National Bank Arena?
Well, we're actually scheduling events there now, but they're very limited in size. And so we have an event that normally has 7,000 or 8,000 people attending. We're limited to about 1,200 people, I think, in that event. And so we have every large event that has more than 50 people, and we have to send that plan to the Department of Health and get approval from them. And so, in fact, I don't think that plan has been approved yet, but that's the plan we've put together. And so we're going to have events there, but just be very limited in scope. We had a big concert that was coming up. Toby Keith concert was going to be maybe last month. I can't remember when it was. We rescheduled that now because we couldn't get everybody in that arena that we needed to have in there. We'd already sold more tickets than we could afford to accommodate in the limited space that we have. And so we just pushed it off for a year. Now, the thing is, a year from now, things may not be better. We may not have a vaccine. We may have high infection rates. But at some point, I think someone will say, you know what, we just got to move forward, just like the flu and just like other illnesses that are out there. By this time next summer, I'm hoping, again, hope's not a strategy, but
right,
I'm hoping that things will be back to more normal. So we've rescheduled that one to July of 2020.
Right. Let's talk about football games.
Sure.
And sports. What will that look like? Will we have a football season?
Well, I wish I knew the answer to that one, because I don't know. Right now, we're planning on there being a season. As you know, we have pre-conference or non-conference games, things that happen before the conference season starts. Then we have the conference. And what we're affected by is not so much what we're doing, but what other people are doing. And so if with our non-conference schedule, if our partners decide to not host games or not want to travel to games, that will affect us. And then our conference, the conference will decide what things look like. And there may be individual schools that say, we're not going to play this year. Then the question becomes, well, if one school from a conference says no, does that mean everybody has to cancel? Or can we just figure out a schedule without that team participating? Mm-hmm. And so that's the big challenge we're facing right now. And then the other thing is, let's assume we have a season and we have games. What does it look like? Are there no fans in the stands? I saw there's a professional soccer season that's going on, just started. The American Soccer Association is playing, and they're playing without fans right now. And they're managing that. Golf is happening without fans right now. So does football happen without fans? Well, it'd be weird, but I'd rather play without fans than not play at all. Then what happens if they say, well, you can have fans, but only one-third capacity? Well, then we'd have to spread people out and figure that out. Our intention is to have the games unless people tell us that we can't have the games. So if our right. opponents say they can't come or we can't go to them, or if the league says or the NCAA says no playing, then we won't play.
Right.
And that's what happened in this spring. We had a baseball team that was on the bus. They were ready to go play, and the NCAA basically said no more playing, and we had to empty the bus out. So once someone from outside said we couldn't do anymore, we complied.
Right. Not much you can do that point. So there is one more question I wanted to ask you about. Earlier in the year, the music department had received a gift from Cade Holliday. Uh-huh. Was one of the graduates. And with all the allegations that are going on against him right now with the county clerk's office, how do you all handle a situation like this? And there's been some people who've been curious about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I understand the curiosity of the situation. It's sad to see someone that I know personally go through this, and I'm curious as well to see what will happen as a result of the investigation and what carries forward. From our perspective, any donation that people give to us goes not to the university but to the ASU Foundation. The ASU Foundation is actually a system entity, so the money is now in a private foundation that's not under my control. It's under the control of the system. And so this becomes a decision of the president, President Welch, and the director of the foundation. And so in this case, Mr. Holliday had pledged a large amount, but had only given a couple of small gifts. And some of those gifts had not been spent, but the value of the gift declined because the economy, you know, these monies get invested and the value of the gift declined from its original value. And some of the money had been spent. And so as soon as we found out about what was happening, the system president froze those two accounts. We're not spending from those. And then started cooperating with the county judge and investigators to find out where the extent to which that money might belong to somebody else, might not be the money that may not have belonged to the donor. Excuse me. And so when we're cooperating with the investigation right now, and if at some point we have to give that money back, then we'll certainly follow those instructions. We don't know where the investigation is right now as far as our money, the money that is in the foundation.
Right.
But we're cooperating with everybody, and we'll find out where we are then.
And that was Arkansas State University's Chancellor, Dr. Kelly Damphis, on A-State Connections on KASU.